facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to March Madness on the Cale Clark Show. Patrick Alog told me, don't say that until the tournament starts, but I just did. I can't take it back. It's March. I can't believe it. It's March 1st, Monday, March the 1st on the Cale Clark Show. So glad that you're along with me for the ride. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call, toll free. Of course, you can also tweet at me, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. It's my Twitter handle, and we have a show account too, at Cale Clark Show. The email address remains unchanged, cale@relevantradio.com. So much good stuff to share with you this week. I can't wait to get going with it. Saw an incredible article in The Atlantic by Arthur C. Brooks. And it's about perfectionism and the fear of failure and the courage to actually mess up. It's okay. It's okay to fail. That's what our Catholic life is about all the time, right? That's why we have to keep going to confession all the time. But a lot of people struggle with this in other areas of their lives as well. Now, Arthur Brooks, by the way, not only does he write for The Atlantic magazine, but he also teaches at the Harvard Business School, and he hosts a podcast called The Art of Happiness with Arthur Brooks. And he talks about the fact that he was haunted by, despite being such an accomplished guy, he was haunted by a fear of failure his whole life. And this is something that I've struggled with too. And it's kind of related to another fear that people have, by the way, as well, the fear of success. There's fear of failure. There's also fear of success, and perfectionism can tie into that. And so can scrupulosity. And we had a show not too long ago that was all about scrupulosity. And that was actually one of the most popular shows we've ever done. It's incredible how that resonated with people. So maybe this will too, this topic of the fear of failure and perfectionism. So Arthur Brooks talks about being haunted by this pretty much his whole life. And he actually used to be a French horn player, if you can believe this. He used to play in orchestras, chamber music ensembles. And playing the French horn is a pretty tricky business. You have to be so precise, and you can easily miss notes. He calls it a virtual high wire act in every concert. You can go from hero to goat in the matter of moments, in the matter of just a few notes. So he used to live in constant fear of this, of every performance. And he was quite miserable because of this. He couldn't really enjoy his work. And it's not just a problem for people who play the French horn. It's obviously a problem for all of us at some level. And what drives this for most people, this idea of a fear of failure, it's looking bad in front of other people. That's the most common dread that most people have. So we all have heard this. Researchers have found that the most common fear that people have, their number one fear, is public speaking. And in fact, death is number two. Death is only number two on the list of people's fears. Public speaking is number one. And if you're a fan of Seinfeld and his old comedy show, he had that famous joke, I guess this means that at a funeral, most people would rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy. Well, any dread about failing doesn't just come to that point of view of public speaking. Really, even very accomplished people suffer with this as well. A recent survey that came out in 2018 said that 90% of CEOs admit that the fear of failure keeps them up at night more than anything else. Now, I don't think Father Rocky, the CEO of Relevant Radio, ever struggles with that because he prays, he's at peace. But a lot of CEOs, they do struggle with fear of failure. And this is on the rise. And in fact, people are so scared of failing that they don't want to try new things. They don't want to build businesses. The World Bank says that the percentage of American adults who want to start a business, but they don't because of fear of failure, that has been on the rise for the last two decades. And so this is troubling because obviously the United States is known as an entrepreneurial hotbed, the spirit of innovation. Well, apparently not. Apparently more people don't think that they're an American. They think they're an American't, I guess you could say. They don't want to start up new businesses because they're afraid they might fail. Now, why are people in this day and age more fearful of failure than ever before in general? Well, there are a few reasons, and Albert Brooks theorizes that social media obviously is at play here, because every time you slip up, every time you fail in any way, this is going to be broadcast to the entire world. It could be an extinction level event, as he says. People are getting canceled left, right, and centered. And obviously also, he talks about parenting and how parenting styles over the last 20, 30 years are so much different than what came before. And, you know, kids are in precarious situations now that they weren't before. You used to be able to let your kids go out and play, you know, in the neighborhood by themselves until the streetlights came on or even later and not worry about it too much. But these days, of course, helicopter parenting seems to be the norm. A lot of kids have been super sheltered and protected. And as a result, the downside of this is that, yes, I mean, the intention is good to try to protect them from harm, but the problem is they don't get to experience maybe some of the small risks and failures growing up that you need. You need to experience them before you can handle the big failures of adulthood, which are inevitably coming. And so that's a problem. And but Arthur C. Brooks, in his article, he says, well, I'm not so concerned about entrepreneurs not wanting to start businesses, although that's bad enough. I'm more worried about people building happy lives, because if you succumb to a fear of failure and perfectionism, it has incredibly harsh consequences for your day-to-day well-being. For some people, it can actually lead to depression, a major depression. It can lead to an actual condition, a diagnosable condition that's called acticophobia. I've never heard of this before, but acticophobia, and this is an actual fear of failure that can be diagnosed as a psychological condition. But even before it gets to that point, it can lead people away from taking risks, trying new things, having fulfilling adventures, living the everyday joys of life. I have a relative who does this all the time. I'm not going to say who it is. She went to Hawaii and was scared to... She was on the beach in Hawaii with her family and was scared to even dip her toe in the water. I mean, come on, you're going to fly all the way out to Hawaii and not dip your toe in the water? Come on, much less swim. So people are missing out on great experiences of life because of this. Now, what really drives this? Well, there's been lots of studies delving into what's behind this, and a lot of it seems to be about what they call unknown outcomes when it comes to the fear of failure and why people experience that all the time. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If this is resonating with you, if you have a question or comment about this, you can call 1-888-914-9149, or you can tweet at me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Let's have a drink of water there. Excuse me. So this fear of unknown outcomes. There was a study that was done at University College London in which participants took part in this experiment, and there was a series of bets that they had to make, a series of gambles. And some of the bets had pretty much guaranteed rewards. The odds were definitely in your favor. So if you choose this, you're going to get something out of it. Now, there were a series of other bets that they could have chosen that had potentially higher losses. You could lose more, but you could also win more. So people who suffer from anxiety, this fear of failure, they were unable to estimate what is the best bet to make. What's the best probable reward that I could expect to get? So this idea is that it's uncertainty about whether or not you're going to fail. That actually bothers people more than the consequences of failing. That's an interesting insight. So it's the uncertainty about whether or not they're going to fail in the first place. And they found that people who strongly feel failure, their personalities tend to have two particular characteristics: low achievement orientation, and that means that they don't take a whole lot of pleasure. Even if they accomplish something, they don't really enjoy it that much. If they meet a goal, it doesn't mean that much to them. They don't really celebrate that. So low achievement orientation and what they call high test anxiety. What's high test anxiety? That's when you fear not performing well at a crucial moment, not coming through in the clutch. Say you're going to make a PowerPoint presentation for your boss and you're afraid you're going to blow it. So what's the deal with these people psychologically who really suffer from fear of failure? They're motivated less by the possibility of winning and gaining something of value. They're actually motivated more by being afraid of messing up. So this is interesting too, because it really does, this really exemplifies some of the same personality traits that drive people who struggle with perfectionism. So this is really fear of failure, and I have been there. Trust me, I've been there. Perfectionism and the fear of failure actually go hand in hand. They lead you to believe that success isn't doing something good, but it's about not doing something badly. So picture it this way, and this is the illustration that Arthur Brooks gives. There was a famous mountain climber named George Mallory, and he was asked once, you know, why did you climb this mountain? He said, because it's there. It's there, so it needs to be conquered. So that's one attitude, but the attitude of the perfectionist who's fearing failure, they're going to spend all that time climbing the mountain thinking about how can I not fall off this cliff rather than enjoying the journey. So how do you stop this? How do you stop this insane perfectionism and fear of failure? How do you stop it from taking over your life? Well, the best way to tame fear is to hone your sense of courage. There's a researcher named Stanley Rockman. He was a psychologist. And in the 1980s, he started shadowing people in dangerous professions. Bomb diffusers. I don't know if you ever saw the movie The Hurt Locker. Those kind of guys. Paratroopers. Now, these guys tended to fear failure as well, because if they messed up, if your job is to defuse a bomb and you screw this up, it's not going to end well. So they tended to fear failure too. However, despite the way they were feeling, they were able to act anyways in spite of their feelings. They were able to tap into reserves of courage. So Stanley Rockman, when he was doing this research, he said, actually, that's a good thing that they felt some fear. If you're completely fearless, if you have no sense of fear, that would be quite abnormal. That would actually be quite dangerous, because that would lead to incredibly foolish chances that you would take, number one. And number two, that would be bad leadership. If you're in a position of leadership and you don't have a sense of what could go wrong, that's real trouble that could be brewing. So courage is important. The virtue of courage is really important, but so is the virtue of prudence. And so real courage helps you to balance these two things, the resolve to go forward and prudence. And we need this. We need courage, but we also need prudence. And we need this when we're defusing all kinds of bombs, even if it's just a dispute between a couple of fellow coworkers in the office. Who's going to eat the last donut? I don't know. So all of these things are characteristics we would rather get rid of. An aversion to uncertainty, an attachment to perfectionism, a lack of courage. So facing the fear of failure, as Brooks says, it's more than just dealing with this problem. You actually have an opportunity here to grow in virtue. And you can start with three concrete practices. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, and this is where the Catholic angle comes in. And I don't know whether Arthur C. Brooks is a Catholic or not. He probably is. Maybe he's not, but... Oh, he is. Okay, producer Lucas just told me he is. And that makes sense to me, because he uses this prayer as one of his suggestions. I'll get to this in just a second. It's an incredibly powerful prayer. It's changed my life in a lot of ways for the better, and I'm going to share that with you in just a moment. So here are three things that you can do to grow in virtue so you can overcome your fear of failure and your perfectionism. So number one, concrete thing to do, focus on the present moment. And Brooks says that once he was talking with an oncologist, a cancer doctor, about the experience of having to break it to people, having to give people a really, really bad piece of news. You have a late stage cancer diagnosis. You don't have much time left. And so what is that like to have to tell somebody this? Well, this doctor said that some of his patients, especially if they were of this bent, if they were perfectionists, they would have this need to control all areas of their lives. And I kind of laugh here because I am this guy, all right? You can ask my wife, I'm this guy. So sometimes I can try to be a control freak and I have to learn to let go. So patients that need to control tightly all aspects of their lives, what would they do? They would immediately go home. If he gives them this diagnosis of cancer, late stage cancer, what's the first thing they're going to do? Go home, hop on Google and start researching their prognosis on the internet. Play Google Doctor. And he would tell them, don't do this. Whatever you do, please don't go home and start researching on the internet. You're going to drive yourself crazy. You're going to make yourself sick with worry. This is not the approach to take. So here's what he told them to do. He would say, instead of doing that, okay, first of all, I'm your doctor. You can trust me for the information that you need. But number two, start every day with this mantra and say this to yourself. I do not know what will happen next week or next year, but I know this. I have the gift of this day and I will not waste it. I don't know what will happen next week or next year, but I know I have the gift of this day and I will not waste it. So this doctor would tell this to his patients, and it helped them a lot, not just with respect to their outlook about cancer, but really with their overall approach to life. And really all of us can say this. If we're suffering from a fear of failure, extreme worry of perfectionism, I don't know what's going to happen next week. I don't know what's going to happen next year. I don't know what's going to happen an hour from now, but I do know this. I have the gift of this day. I have the gift of the present moment, and I will not waste it. So if we have gratitude for the present moment, and that's why they call it the present, it's a gift. I know that's cheesy, but couldn't resist. But when you do have gratitude for the present moment, in all seriousness, you can see your happiness kind of go off the charts, because we learn to enjoy what we have in front of you, which is really all we have. The past we have to leave to God's mercy, the future to God's providence. It's the present where we can encounter him. And the second thing he says here, so these three concrete steps that we can take to overcome perfectionism and fear of failure. Albert Brooks says, we've got to visualize courage. Now, what does he mean by that? Back to our example of public speaking, the number one fear of people, death is number two. Remember the Jerry Seinfeld joke. The most common fear that people have is speaking in public. Even just the thought of having to do this makes some people panic. So what's the solution? Exposure. You do it, and you do it again, and again, and again, and again, and again, until you're not scared of it anymore. Now, that doesn't mean, he says, that doesn't mean going to Speaker's Corner and hauling out a soapbox and start preaching to crowds every day. Just imagining such an environment using, quote-unquote, virtual reality, that can actually lower your fear a great deal. Now, he doesn't mean strapping on a VR headset like, you know, an Oculus or something like that. What he's saying is use visualization techniques, your imagination, in a concentrated way to do this. Athletes do this all the time, by the way. They visualize making that winning free throw, sinking that putt to win the Masters. They visualize it so that, when, you know, they've done this before in their mind, so that when they do it in real life, they say, well, I've actually done this before. I've seen this in my mind's eye. So it's a way to avoid the source of fear, even in your mind, and that can help. So what Albert Brooks did, he eventually became a teacher. Obviously, he teaches at Harvard. And one of the things he was scared of, too, and if he was scared to play the French horn in an orchestra section, certainly he's afraid to talk in front of a classroom full of people. So he had to visualize in his teaching career bad things that might happen, and how am I going to handle that? Visualize even the failure. So he visualized, for example, forgetting his notes when he was speaking to his class, or even absurd situations like after an hour-long lecture, oh, I realized my fly was down the whole time and they were all making fun of me. And he said, by the way, that did actually happen to him in his teaching career, but just doing this, just visualizing these from Lucas, he said that happened to him as well. No, I'm only kidding. No, he didn't. He had to tell me something else really important in my ear. So I am a horrible multitasker, I'll tell you that. I can't listen and talk at the same time. My wife tells me this all the time. Anyways, so this actually happened to him in front of his class one day, but just visualizing these scenarios, even these bad scenarios, helped him to be a better teacher. Now, so those are the first two things you got to remember. Number one, focus on the present. Number two, visualize. Visualize having courage. Visualize even the fears coming true. So what? What are you going to do about it? You're going to handle it really well in your little rehearsal. But the third thing involves a really, really powerful prayer. This is probably in my top three prayers of all time that I've ever prayed. And if you don't know about this prayer, you need to. It's going to change your life. And I'm going to share this with you right after this quick break. It's the K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. 9149.
Kyrie eleison is Greek for Lord have mercy. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 11th Lenten lesson on the Mass. After we confess our sins at the start of Mass, we then beg God for mercy. The opening scene of the 1963 film Lord of the Flies shows British prep school boys in uniform marching in formation on the beach of a South Pacific island as they cheerfully sing their upbeat version of Kyrie eleison. By the end of the movie, they're behaving like savages, for their teachers had been killed in the plane crash and only the boys survived. The movie is a metaphor for the effects of original sin and what the human race would be like without our divine Savior. When we honestly come to grips with the reality of our situation, fallen human nature as a result of original sin, how can we fail to cry out, Lord, have mercy?
One of the three pillars of Lent is prayer. So make this your best Lent yet by joining Father Rocky for the Family Rosary Across America every evening at 7 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Oh, yes, that's the new Post Malone cover of Hootie and the Blowfish. I only want to be with you. But he changed the lyrics, apparently. We'll have to find that segment later. Producer Lucas was really happy to hear this version because in the prior version, of course, the original by Hootie and the Blowfish, the line is, I'm such a baby because the Dolphins make me cry. And Lucas's favorite NFL team is the Dolphins, who have certainly made him cry a lot over the past couple of decades. But they're getting better now. But apparently Post Malone changed it to the Cowboys. The Cowboys make me cry. I don't know. So, Cowboy fans, I don't know if you like that or not. But having said that, let's get back to fear of failure and perfectionism. That has something to do with sports fans, that's for sure. And we're talking about this article that appeared in The Atlantic by Arthur C. Brooks about, it's called Go Ahead and Fail. It's about perfectionism, fear of failure, how to overcome it. So he talks about three concrete things to do. We went over the first two before the break. Number one, focus on the present. Number two, visualize being courageous. And number three, this is the one that really struck me. He calls it litanize humility, litanize humility. Now, we Catholics are very fond of litanies, and there is a litany involved here. Believe me, I love that phrase, litanize humility. So he talks about Dante's Divine Comedy. And in Dante's Divine Comedy, Satan is pictured as a victim of his terrible pride by being frozen from the waist down, fixed in agony, in ice of his own making. And he says that Arthur Brooks says that fear of failure and perfectionism are like that prideful sea of ice that Satan is stuck in, freezing you in place with thoughts of what others will think of you, or worse, what you will think of yourself if you do not succeed at something. Now, that really clicked for me. This is something that a lot of people don't realize, and this might help you to change your perspective on perfectionism, on the fear of failure. If you feel this way, you might have actually fallen prey to the sin of pride in a very, very insidious way. It's so subtle. But think about it. Why are you afraid to fail? Because you're afraid of not looking good in front of other people, and afraid of being embarrassed. What will they think of me if I fall flat on my face? So you don't go for it. So you're taking pride in your reputation of being failure-free. But at the same time, maybe you've never actually achieved anything that you wanted to because you played it too safe. You're too scared. So that's a really interesting thought to me. But here's the solution that Arthur Brooks recommends. And it has to do with an early 20th century Spanish cardinal. And his name was, great name, Cardinal Rafael Mary Del Val. And M-E-R-R-Y. So he's a merrymaker, and he certainly is. But he composed this beautiful prayer, and it's called the Litany of Humility. I don't know if you've ever seen this prayer, but it's a great, great prayer. And I'm going to read it for you, actually, in just a moment. We might as well pray it together. But
Cale,
the prayer. Oh, yes. Karen, go ahead.
Cale, we have that on our app.
Yes. You're absolutely right. And I'm going to
everyone, open up your app right now and read along with Cale.
Yeah, if you're listening on the app right now, you can pray along with us right now. So if you're on the Relevant Radio app, go to the section that says pray, And then go to Devotions. Right,
yep. Yes, there it is. And it's there. Litany of Humility.
Yep.
It'll blow your mind.
You know, I'll tell you the story about how I found out about the Litany of Humility in just a minute. It's I have a personal experience with this, but let me share this with you. And the prayer does not ask that we be spared humiliation, but we be given the grace to deal with the fear that goes along with it. The virtue of humility, it's often been said that there is no humility without humiliation. And in many ways, that's true. In many ways, that's true. So let's take a look at this prayer. And this is a very dangerous prayer, and I'm going to explain why. But here's the prayer. So this is the Litany of Humility by Cardinal Raphael Mary Del Valle. So here's how it goes. O Jesus, meek and humble of heart, hear me. From the desire of being esteemed, deliver me, O Jesus. From the desire of being loved, deliver me, O Jesus. From the desire of being extolled, deliver me, O Jesus. From the desire of being honored, deliver me, O Jesus. From the desire of being praised, deliver me, O Jesus. From the desire of being preferred to others, deliver me, O Jesus. From the desire of being consulted, deliver me, O Jesus. How often do we want to be consulted? What do you think about this? Right. From the desire of being approved, deliver me, O Jesus. From the fear of being humiliated, deliver me, O Jesus. Karen, why don't you read the rest of the prayer?
Right. You just can jump right in there. From the fear of being despised, deliver me, O Jesus. From the fear of suffering rebukes, deliver me, O Jesus. From the fear of being calumniated, did I say that right? Mm-hmm. Spoken badly about, I guess. Deliver mm-hmm. me, O Jesus. From the fear of being forgotten, deliver me, O Jesus. From the fear of being ridiculed, deliver me, O Jesus. From the fear of being wronged, deliver me, O Jesus. From the fear of being suspected, deliver me, O Jesus. That others may be loved more than I, Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. This is the part that gets me the most. That others may be esteemed more than I, Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. That in the opinion of the world, others may increase and I may decrease, Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. That others may be chosen and I set aside, Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. That others may be praised and I go unnoticed, Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. That others may be preferred to me in everything, Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. And this one gets me every time. That others may become holier than I, provided that I may become as holy as I should, Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. Amen.
Amen. It's a beautiful prayer. And why does that hit you so hard, Karen?
It's the perfect way of asking. Because what is it we fear? Fear is the thing that stops us. Mm-hmm. And the grace to desire the things that are appropriate. And then to love people so much that you want them to become more holier, more holy than you, more desired than you. Like, it's all about, help me order my desires appropriately. Help me deal with my fears and help me love people, you know? So it's really cool. I pray this every Friday. It comes up in a program that I pray. So since about October of last year, I've been observing, you know, this Litany of Humility on Fridays of all days.
Wow.
But I love it. And it's a great way to just, you know, bring it back down, you know?
Absolutely.
And then maybe there have been some Fridays where I'm just reading it. But some Fridays it hits me. But that last one always gets me.
Oh,
because
yeah.
We're all concerned to be holy. We're all called to be holy. But if you can desire that someone else would be holier than you, as long as you're as holy as you're supposed to be. I think you've got it right.
It's an incredible prayer. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149, in dialogue here with Karen Moran, a producer here at Relevant Radio, about this Litany of Humility. So this is a very dangerous prayer, but it's a great prayer. It's really, really good. It's really good. It's called the Litany of Humility by Cardinal Raphael Mary Delval, and it's available on the Relevant Radio app, and presumably also on the website, too. I'm sure it's there somewhere, too. It's great.
It's really so perfect, the mind that would think, the mind that would create a prayer like this, and we're, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's,
yes.
It's spiritually deep. It's incredibly deep. This is good, good stuff. So, just to circle it back to this article by Arthur Brooks, he basically says you can make your own version of the Litany of Humility and recite it each night. You can kind of add your own verses, if you will. And it might seem ridiculous to you, but whatever is bothering you, whatever you're afraid of when it comes to perfectionism or fear of failure, somebody might say, from the fear of messing up my PowerPoint presentation, deliver me, you know. So this is what you need to do. If you want to overcome this fear, you have to state it. You have to say it. So then you speak it out there. Okay, it's out there, and now I can deal with it. Now I can, with God's help, try to conquer this thing. And then at the end of the article, this is really funny. He does say there's one more thing you can do to get over a fear of failure, and it's this. Just go ahead and fail, spectacularly. And then he said, really, that's what cured him. And remember, I started off by saying he was a French horn player in an orchestra. Well, fear of public speaking and fear of making a mistake playing on the French horn kind of came together with him, for him in one night. So he was at a chamber music concert at Carnegie Hall in New York City, of all places, at the famed Carnegie Hall. He was there to perform with an orchestra. And his job was, before the music started, to go out and give a short speech to the audience, maybe 2 minutes, about the piece that they were going to play, just kind of introduce it. So he steps out of his chair with his French horn, walks to the front of the stage. He's literally shaking in his boots, and he loses his footing. He falls into the audience. He literally falls into the front row. And he says, decades later, I can still see it happening in slow motion. The audience is gasping. He jumps up. His horn is damaged. His arm is injured. And he shouts in a very ridiculous way, because everybody knew he was hurt, I'm okay, folks. Everything is fine. Well, years later, he still laughs at that. It wasn't funny at the time, but it did become an incredible gift for him. He scored a perfect 10 in humiliation. And ever since that day, he really didn't care anymore about looking ridiculous in front of others. He takes more risks, shows his personality in ways that he wouldn't before. In a sense, he says, failure set me free. And it's amazing what we can accomplish if that's the case.
It is true. It is true. You know, talking about humility, there's no humility without humiliation.
Yeah.
There's a meme that's like about Karen.
Like, not you.
And I'm like, no, I mean, hello, we're all kind of, but, you know, who among us has not had to talk to the manager once or twice in life? But my name is Karen. So it's like always there. And so when people say, you know, just, we were on a trail ride, you know, and the guide is saying, oh, everyone go down the row and tell your name. And I'm the back of the line. I'm like, favorite name of 2020, Karen. And then it was just became, you know, kind of a laugh. It's like, you know, you've really arrived at the opportunities for humiliation when your name becomes a meme and you can every day just say, well, what's your name, Karen? Really? Yeah.
And and you have to talk to the manager. Oh, what's your name, Miss Karen? Oh,
Karen,
Karen wants to talk to the manager,
Karen,
everybody.
Right.
Yeah, of course. All right. Well, yeah, well, that's part of your litany of humility, I guess you could say, lived out in real time. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're going to go to the phones right now. Mike is calling from St. Paul, Minnesota. Mike, you are live on the Cale Clark Show. What is your comment or question?
Hey, Cale.
Hey, Mike.
I just wanted to say I heard this comment a while back when I was training as a missionary, and they were talking about the same thing about helicopter parents, pretty much described it as you described it. But what I thought was interesting that he wanted to add, the guy who was training us, giving the talk, he wanted to add on top of that, he mentioned that nowadays there's these parents that he calls snowplowing parents.
Snowplow parenting.
Yeah, so what that means is, you know, just like a snowplow, it plows the snow, creates his path, and everyone follows, right? Well, it's the same thing with parents and their kids. Parents will create this path for them to follow. They'll set them up with a great education if they go to this school and that school, and they just feed them with this money and opportunities of, I'm just going to give it all to my kid, and all it is just a path. All you have to do is just simply walk it. And I thought it was I thought it was so true and so interesting, especially because it doesn't create that opportunity for growth and virtue, kind of like how you were talking about. So just listen to your show made me think of that, and I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thanks for listening, and thanks for calling in. I have actually never heard that expression, snowplow parenting, where you just plow the road ahead and set your kid up for success and give him everything he needs, clear the ground, and then they can just stride right on through. And you know what? There's no question that's out there. There's no question that's out there. And is that good for kids? I mean, every parent wants to give their kids an advantage at some level, try to help them as much as they can. But it's also good for them to earn some stuff on their own. And one of the things I'm thankful for is, when I went to university, I had to work throughout my university years. My dad paid for a lot of it, but I had to pay for a lot of it myself too. And I thought that helped me. I think hopefully it helped me. And it's good for kids to take some responsibility for themselves as well on this journey too. But yeah, that's an interesting phrase, snowplow parenting. Appreciate that, Mike. And thanks for the call, Mike, listening in St. Paul, Minnesota. Really appreciate that. Well, we always try to control all the circumstances, and that's part of this whole perfectionism thing. People struggle with this, want to control things for themselves and for other people too. And I got to confess, guilty as charged. That's something that I struggle with, and I'm going to control what's going to happen on the show in the next few seconds. We are going to take a break. We have to take a break, but we'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show. 1-888-914-9149. Stick around.
Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble. When you're perfect in every way, I can't wait to look in the mirror.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the show. And that was, of course, Justin Bieber, my fellow Canadian, who is celebrating a birthday today. Happy birthday, Biebs. He's 27 years old. He is one of Lucas Holt's, producer Lucas's personal heroes. And tragically, Lucas had today to cut off his Justin Bieber locks. Lucas finally got a haircut. I know you can't see this guy over radio, and that's a good thing because he was looking pretty scraggly over the last little while. He was kind of channeling Bieber from about 10 years ago with those long flowing locks, and he looks a lot more professional today, folks, let me tell you. But yeah, happy birthday to the Biebs. And somebody else who's quite well known, who did say something today, who was heard from today, not Bieber, but Tiger Woods, another maestro, of course. And Tiger Woods did speak publicly today for the first time since his horrific car accident, which happened last week on Tuesday. And we talked about that last week. But he did speak, did release a statement from the hospital today. And on Good Morning America this morning, Kenneth Moten talked about this.
Good morning, Rob. And the tributes were all over the green Sunday. Thousands of pro golfers and elite community. But there is only one Tiger Woods, and his fellow golfers wore that signature Tiger red and black to honor him.
This morning, Tiger Woods breaking his silence after last week's terrifying rollover crash, tweeting to every golfer and every fan, "You are truly helping me get through this tough time." Woods has been recovering since Tuesday when the SUV he was driving lost control, rolling over and shattering his right leg.
It's very fortunate that Mr. Woods was able to come out of this alive.
The golfing great undergoing surgery, where doctors inserted screws and pins to stabilize the bones in his tibia, ankle, and foot, and a metal rod in his shin, which suffered multiple comminuted fractures, meaning his bones were shattered to splinters. At the end of last week, Woods was transferred to Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, one of the top orthopedic centers in the country. Sunday, golfers like Rory McIlroy and Phil Mickelson showing their love for the GOAT, wearing his signature red polo and black pants as they competed in the final round of the WGC Workday Championship. Woods tweeting overnight, "It is hard to explain how touching today was when I turned on the TV and saw all the red shirts."
And the big winner of the WGC, Colin Morikawa, who thanked Woods. He's now won a major championship and a World Golf Championship title before the age of 25. Get this, guys, the only other golfer to do that? Yep, Tiger Woods.
All right, that was Kenneth Moten from Good Morning America. I thought it was really touching yesterday when so many pro golfers showed their support for Tiger, wearing those red shirts, black pants, that famous Tiger Sunday outfit. that he used, that he wore when he won so many championships, and of course, all of his 15 majors. And a lot of people are trying to compare the potential. We don't know if Tiger is going to come back from this and play again. We don't know whether he has the desire to. Could he? Of course. If anybody can do it, it's him. His competitive drive, legendary. A lot of people are trying to compare his incident with this car crash with what happened to Ben Hogan, who is another famous golfer, one of the greatest of all times. He had a similar, well, actually, in many ways, it was worse, a car accident that happened to him in 1949. And when Tiger actually came back, Tiger's had all these back surgeries too. And when he came back to the Masters before he won it, somewhat improbably in 2019, when he came back to the Masters the year before in 2018, he had been away for 2 years at that point, rehabbing his various injuries, his chronic back problems. Somebody asked him a question during a press conference. They said that if you were to go on and win the Masters, come back and win here, it would be the greatest sporting comeback of all time. And Tiger absolutely said, no way. First of all, sports writers are fond of hyperbole. They always want to say this is the greatest comeback of all time. But he talked about Ben Hogan with dutiful respect because Tiger Woods knows the history of golf. He's a great golf historian, and he knew what Ben Hogan had to go through in the 1940s, a near-fatal automobile accident, and he came back to win 6 out of the 9 major championships that he did win were after the horrific accident in the life of Ben Hogan. And here's what Tiger Woods said at the time. He said, quote, "I think that one of the greatest comebacks in all of sport is the gentleman who won here." And of course, he met at Augusta National at the Masters, Mr. Hogan. He got hit by a bus and came back and won major championships. The pain he had to endure, the things he had to do just to play, the wrapping of the legs, the hot tubs, and just how hard it was for him to walk, period. That's one of the greatest comebacks there is, and it happens to be in our sport, end of quote. Now, at that point, Woods had not walked in Ben Hogan's shoes, but now that's exactly what he's doing. So this could be, in some ways, even more daunting than what Hogan had to come back from. But here's what happened with Ben Hogan. If you don't know the story, this happened on February the 2nd, 1949. It was actually Groundhog Day. And Ben Hogan was driving his brand new Cadillac with his wife, Valerie. They had just come back from Phoenix, where Hogan had lost in a playoff to Jimmy Demarete at the Phoenix Open. Ben Hogan's in Texas. He's back in Texas. And he's on this ice-covered road 37 miles west of Van Horn, Texas. A Greyhound bus collides head-on with Hogan's Cadillac. And what had happened was Ben Hogan had just begun to cross a bridge. He'd just begun to cross a small bridge on Highway 80, and he had no room to avoid being hit by this 20,000-pound Greyhound bus. Now, the bus had just passed a truck, and it was still in the passing, while he was on the other side of the road. It was a two-lane road, and Hogan was only driving about 25 miles an hour. He was going really slow because of the fog and ice. He tried to avoid the Greyhound bus as best he could, and in a very gallant move, a gesture of gallantry, he dove across the front seat to protect his wife, Valerie, from the inevitable collision, and that turned out to save both of their lives. Because he did this, Valerie was prevented from being thrown clear through the front windshield of the car. She only had minor injuries, but Ben Hogan, who at that point was the reigning U.S. Open, the reigning PGA champion, he was hurt in a huge way. Broken left ankle, contusions to his left leg, broken collarbone, cracked ribs, a double fracture of the pelvis, cuts on his head, internal injuries. Now, as bad as that sounds, if he had not dived across to protect his wife, he would have died for sure, because as soon as the bus hit his car, the engine of the car drove the steering column so far back it actually went through the driver's seat. It certainly would have impaled Hogan had he stayed where he was. So it took 90 minutes for an ambulance to get onto the scene. It took a long time for him to be extricated from the wreckage. And they didn't think Hogan would survive. In fact, initial reports said that he was, in fact, dead. And seeing the wreckage of the car, and you can Google images of this, you can understand why people thought that. Nobody thought he would ever walk again, for sure. Returning to golf at the highest levels, forget about it. It seemed like an impossibility. And at this point, really, Hogan was at the height of his golfing powers. He was the golfer of the year the previous year in 1948. Just was really on a hot streak. He spent 60 days, almost 59 days, in the hospital in El Paso. And about a month into this three-month stint, blood clots started to form in his left leg. One broke off and invaded his right lung. And it became very grave for him. And so a specialist was called in by the name of Dr. Alton Ochsner from Tulane University in New Orleans. And during a two-hour procedure, he tied off the main vein that delivers blood from the lower extremities to the heart. Now, because he did that, he had to do that to save Hogan's life. Hogan would endure severe pain, circulatory problems in his legs for really the rest of his life. And he didn't have any of the medical advances that are available today to somebody like Tiger Woods, who's recovering. But Hogan was only 36 years old at the time when he was in this horrific car crash. Woods is a little bit older. He's 45 right now. Woods just had his fifth back surgery. He's had numerous procedures on his right knee, and that's the leg that was most damaged in Tiger's crash last week. So in the case of Ben Hogan, he spent quite a few months learning basically how to walk again, and he came back, and he actually won. He started winning tournaments again. He won the U.S. Open the following year. Really an incredible comeback. He didn't play very much for the rest of his career, but when he did play, it was sort of spot duty. But like I said, he won six of his nine majors post-injury, so there is hope. And that's going to be definitely an inspiration for Woods going forward as he recovers from this incredible, devastating car accident that happened last week. So having said that, the guy, by the way, who was driving the bus that hit Ben Hogan, at the end of the day, he was found guilty of an aggravated assault charge and paid a fine of $25. So anyways, there was quite a long court case that took place there. So we pray for Tiger's recovery, and it's great to see that he's encouraged by all the support that he's getting from people all around the world. And I thought that was really neat yesterday. A lot of the golfers, not everybody, but a lot of golfers on tour wearing Tiger's signature red and black to kind of encourage the big cat as he is in hospital in the Los Angeles area. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Well, we're just starting off an incredible week. So if there are topics you want to hear about, let us know. You can email the show, kale@relevantradio.com. You can tweet at me, @KaleClark is my Twitter handle. It's so great to hear from you. It's always a pleasure. It's always great to have you on board for the show. And hope you enjoyed it today. We got another great show for you tomorrow, and I can't wait. But Timory's coming up next. Really want to thank Lucas Holt for producing, Karen Moran for work in social media and joining me for that fun segment on perfectionism, and Patrick Alog was that friendly voice on the other end of the phone when you called the show. Thanks, Patrick, for screening the calls today. And we got a lot of great stuff coming up once again this week. So excited to be with you. So excited to be on Relevant Radio. It's the Cale Clark Show. Have a great evening, everybody. Take care.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.